The Twitter streets are talking about library use, HarperCollins using AI, and a querying story that will knock your socks off. This is Ceree Reads, the weekend special, holiday special, really. Thank you so much for stopping by. Some authors are convinced that HarperCollins is in the business of stealing manuscripts. There was a tweet earlier this week that, was it this week? January 9th. And it was screenshots from it looks like an insider, which alluded to the notion of HarperCollins using AI to using manuscripts to fuel their AI efforts. That's what I wanted to say. And so the tweet, it's a text message conversation or private message conversation. And the person who will remain unnamed said, Harper just introduced an AI platform yesterday and is requiring everyone to do training today. They want us to upload full manuscripts. They said that we have to decide internally whether or not to upload manuscripts and whether or not authors give permission for this is undetermined. To be clear, anyone could upload a manuscript internally without having to consult the author, from our understanding in the training. And so this set off a firestorm, with one person tweeting in all caps, HarperCollins is telling their staff to train with AI without author's consent. I repeat, HarperCollins is telling their staff to upload full manuscripts and they are not required to inform authors they are using their manuscripts. Now, one person said, AI is stolen work and plagiarism. They are stealing intellectual property and not even contacting authors that their hard work is being stolen. Another Twitter user said, I wonder if those employees realize that by training AI to make discussion questions and jacket copy, it means HarperCollins is basically asking them to teach the AI how to replace their own jobs as much as ours. That's a really good point, actually. Another person said it would still be subject to copyright, though could require legal action. And someone else just flat out said, Jesus. This is crazy because it's not a secret that AI is an enemy to the creative world on many levels, from writers and books being put out into the Amazon market that are completely AI generated, to, you know, artistry, painters and whatnot, having their works stolen and having, you know, food taken off the table because people would rather go the cheaper route of using AI than to pay a little bit more for quality. I say quality because you can kind of tell when someone uses artificial intelligence. It's just not the same as when a human touch puts their stamp of approval on it. Someone said there hasn't been a good thing to come out of generative AI. Literally every single thing this technology has done has made things worse. The world is a worse place for it. And I kind of agree. I mean, I just don't see the point. And this is really not meant to be a jab, but I don't see the point in ChatGPT. any of these other AI things. I know they're trying to, like, you know, implement them so that, see, you could use AI along with this to spark creativity, but it's just not, it's unnecessary. I am a firm believer that it's just unnecessary. We don't need that. What happened to the good old brainstorming? What happened to the circles that you made and you slept on it, and then you got up and you know, the juices in your mind were going again? It's just, I do not like AI, and I do feel like it is meant to, it is going to be used furthermore to just kind of push out the human touch. And I hate it. That was strong, but I hate it. And so I feel like this HarperCollins situation, I do need to perhaps do more research. This is the weekend special, so it's all on the Twitter streets that we're focusing on. So what does Twitter have to say? But I don't think that there's ever a good time when you use someone's manuscript as a publishing company and you don't tell them that you're using their manuscript, because it just kind of makes me feel like you're using their writing as a model to feed your artificial intelligence machine. And that wouldn't be right if you weren't compensating them. That would kind of be wrong, or at least ask them if that's okay. It's not hitting right. That is the HarperCollins situation. And I just don't like AI. I don't. Have you ever come across a book or an article that made you wonder, did this person have a friend? Did they have someone who could just read over it and give them a critique or two before they put it out in public and, you know, presented it to the world? Well, I came across this tweet from indie author EHH, and it kind of spoke to what I just said. And they wrote, "I am reading a book from a very kind, easily upset person. It is terrible. The story contrived. The writing below what I would tolerate from an amateur. Oh, the writing is so, so bad. They will ask if I enjoyed it, but I cannot hurt them. I hate this." And the responses were interesting, because Boblematic said, "I never ever read books by people I know, ever." Indy replied and said, "This is good advice I wish I followed." Jesse is procrastinating said, "I'm so sorry, you're just going to have to fake your own death." And another person said, "My advice, if they are easily upset, either find a few positives to impart or lie. Being honest isn't going to change anything. I'm not easily upset, so maybe my advice is worthless. It doesn't bother me if people hate my books. My mother was my first ever DNF, and that was okay." I feel like when in the writing sphere, you learn fairly early to move your feelings out of the way for good criticism. And I say good criticism because some people, you know, you can always learn. But, you know, if some people are just like, "Oh, well, I don't like the color of the dress that you picked, and I don't know why, I just don't like it." That's not good criticism. That's just you giving an opinion. But good criticism is, you know, you made the color of her dress pink, and then it doesn't go with, first of all, her having a dress doesn't go with the persona that you've presented. So why did you do that type of thing? That is good feedback. That is good criticism. And as creatives, it is so difficult for us to move our feelings out of the way or separate our feelings because we have labored over this thing. And now you're telling me, you know, it's perfection. When we present it to the world, that's what we feel. And now you're telling me that it's not, that you don't understand the purpose of me writing this, of me creating this. What? But you really do learn the value of, like I said, just, okay, put my feelings on the shelf. And what do you think about what I am presenting? Because you are the world. And if you can't appreciate it, then I don't want to keep going and present it to a larger audience. But then there is also the element of what this person said. It is a friend. And what do you do with that? How do you tell your friend that, hey, what you gave me is terrible? Yeah, this is, I just thought this tweet was interesting because it was right above another tweet by S.J. Watson, who said, I'm rereading an Agatha Christie. And I will tell you something, even leaving aside some of the questionable takes on gender, sexuality, and race, if she wrote it today, it wouldn't be published. And someone said, I'm trying to find the tweet. Oh, I think we're in a golden age of fiction. The competition is so high that authors are writing some absolute masterpieces. The novel form has definitely moved on since Agatha. She set important foundations, but bottom line, published books are much better now than they were then. That is debatable. But that's what makes me, going back to the first tweet about it, just, you know, you having a friend who wrote a book and it's just terrible. Could it be that it's not as terrible? Maybe the standards that we have are higher than, maybe they're just higher. I know that, you know, for me on a personal level, I just revamp my whole rating system, and there are books that I gave a 5-star rating to last year, around this time last year, and I was like, dude, by the end of 2023, I was like, if I would have read those books right now, they would be average books. They wouldn't be something that just blew me away. But that came from me reading more books. And as you read more, I feel like your standards start to get high. So the bar goes higher. And what was like a 5-star amazing book, it's now like, okay, that was good. Okay, thank you. That was all right. But, you know, so it's like, it could be that. It could be that. Or maybe, just maybe, you're right. Maybe that person, indie author, is right that, you know, their friend just didn't put out something that was quote unquote good in the world. I don't know. I take my hat off to authors, even those who write stories that I can't fully appreciate or even rate as average, because it takes a lot to sit down and, first of all, to come to the conclusion that, yes, I have a story to tell, and to get it out into the world. That is some boldness that I totally appreciate, and I take my hat off to. That does not mean that I'm going to give 5-star ratings all the way around. Absolutely not. But I have respect. I have respect for authors, especially indie authors, who say, you know what, no matter what, this is a good story that I have to tell, and I'm going to put it out in the world, even if I am the only one who has to put it out in the world, even if a publishing house does not see the value. I see the value, and I'm going to take the extra steps to have it out there. So hats off to you. But I don't know. The debate about books that should have never been published, especially the quote or the tweet about Agatha Christie. I think she's a really good writer. I do. I've taken on the task of going back and, like you said, and going back over her books. I have Halloween Party or whatever checked out right now. So like I said, maybe it's just that our standards are too high, or higher. And so, maybe we are in a golden age and, you know, 10 years from now, I don't know. I think it fluctuates, but, kudos to everyone who has the heart to write in this environment. There has been much talk about library and the uses for the institution in a public sector. And it's interesting because I used to work at a public library, so I definitely appreciate and know that there is immense value in having an educational institution available, and that the library is a community resource. It's not just coming in and reading books, and you know, they have computers. So people who don't have computers at home, yes, there are people who do not own a computer. They can come to the library. They can fill out applications for jobs. You know, some libraries do passports. That it's a voting center. It's a place where you can get your physical. I hope it's still a place where you can come. Those who file for their tax returns still using paper, you can come to the library. You can come to the library for resources, public library for resources on filing taxes and among a myriad of other things. So the library is a necessary entity in society. And it is also a babysitting spot. As Stacked Librarian points out in a tweet from January 11th, they say, anybody who believes that parents do not straight up drop off and leave their children unattended at the library is sniffing some strong glue. And someone else agreed and said, Megan agreed and said, and too often kids who are dropped off have no one to pick them up by the time the library is closing. It's so infuriating and sad. And if that were not enough in these Twitter streets, oh, Nicole added to the conversation by saying, when I was still working in public libraries, a 4 or 5 year old was left alone at the library on a Saturday afternoon. The parent did not come back until 1.5 hours later, or I'm sorry, 1.5 hours after we closed. That's even worse. And was annoyed when we told them they couldn't leave such a young child alone, especially, okay, the kid didn't know anyone's name or phone number. The parent hadn't considered the potential dangers of an unattended child in a public place and said they thought the librarians, who they hadn't spoken with at all, would just know to babysit the kid. And that's interesting because again, stories from working for a public library. I was an undergrad and I was a library page at the time, and the particular library I was working for, it was a system, but the branch that I was placed at was in a community. So there was the middle school was in walking distance, as was the high school, as was the elementary school. But the parents who picked their kids up from the elementary school, they typically they brought their children with them. But there was this one instance where there was a group, I believe they were middle school students, and they were misbehaving to the degree that they were banned from the library. The library second in command, I guess, of the branch told them, you know, you guys can't come back for a week because you're really disrupting the atmosphere. And 2 days passed, and on that third day, one of the kids, who was kind of the ringleader of the group, came in with his mother, and his mother said, you know, I don't whatever he was doing, he is so sorry. We have had a conversation ad nauseum about this. And I am like, she was begging to allow her kid to come to the library after school because she said, you know, he can't be home without adult supervision. I don't allow that. And so the library is the place for him to come because I work late. And she was like, you know, I've had to take off from work to, you know, be at home with him because she was serious about him not being at home alone. And she was just like, you know, it's just really been a stressful situation. And I thought that that was really, it was an eye opener for me as a 19-year-old, because when we went to the library, we went as a family. And so, and it was typically on the weekend, and we were never just dropped off at the library for anything. Our parents were like, because they understood everyone can come to the library. And honestly speaking, everything comes to the public library. It's true. And so my parents were like, no, you will not be going there by yourself. So that was kind of foreign to me, that like, oh, okay, this is where you send your kid, because, you know, he can't be home alone. And they really rely on the library staff, like that tweet said, to serve as their babysitters. And in the instance of the kid being banned and like the mom coming in and saying, hey, please, pretty please, can he come back in? And he knows to do his homework. He, you know, you will not have these problems out of him anymore. And we didn't. I really viewed that as like a partnership. Like, okay, the mother is actually partnering with us, the library staff, because she sees the need and she understands that, you know, we are the adult presence in his life until she gets off from work. In the instance of the tweet by O. Nicole, where you drop off a 4 or 5-year-old, I think that this may be a bit of, I don't want to say child abuse, but child abuse, is that neglect? And so it's just so interesting that like people view the public library as their babysitters, like parents view outside entity or people, strangers, as individuals who are responsible for their kids. And they get upset because you're not responsible for my kid the way that I feel that you should be. So that is just so interesting. And please don't leave your kids at the public library. Please don't do that. As someone who worked for a public library, let me tell you, they are not watching your kids. They are not watching your kids. They are not, it's just not a safe place, especially for small children. It is not a safe place for small children. There are all types of predators at the public library. I don't mean to scare people, but it's true. And that's not a place where you would leave your child. I wouldn't leave my middle school if I had a child and they were middle school age. I don't think I would take them to the public library and just say, all right, have a good time. Never. You know, because it's just not a safe place. So please, parents, pretty please don't do that. Watch your own kids, okay? We love them, but please watch your own babies, all right? All right. It is querying season for the writing community, and it is indeed the wild, wild west. From rejection letters to being ghosted by agents to being tricked by agents to being harassed to, it's insane and it's crazy. I want to end this show by reading a crazy, crazy querying story that I came across on Twitter at the beginning of this year. And this is given to us courtesy of N.M. Menardi. I hope I'm saying your name correctly. And she writes, it's a long story too. Now that this person has officially left agenting, I feel safe in sharing my experience with Jonathan Rosen. I won't disclose from which agency. If you really want to know, Google it. But I was told by the VP and president that action would be taken, and it appears it has been. Here's the timeline. In April of 2022, early on in my querying journey for Teoa, I'm not saying that name right, but for her book, I queried Jonathan Rosen because he liked my pitch. On April 30th, he asked for The Fool, which I sent to him a couple days later. On May 29th, he offered an R&R, including a call to discuss the revisions. I was so excited and nervous to be getting on a call with an agent after only querying for a couple months. And we even discussed other projects I had in the pipeline. I would later learn that this is as close to the call as you can get. I agreed with his suggested changes and sent him the revised version July 17th, 2022. I never received a confirmation of receipt, but I now know that's not out of the ordinary. I followed up 3 months later to the day to ask if he'd had a chance to read yet. He got back to me the same day to let me know he would get back to me shortly. I proceeded not to hear from him for 7 months. This is where it gets crazy. She didn't hear from him for 7 months, but she says, I gave some leeway because of the holidays, but I was so afraid to seem annoying to someone who I was sure was going to offer to be my agent that I kept silent. Finally, in May of 2023, a year later, with the support of some writer friends, I decided to reach out one more time. At this point, I'd given up on him, and truly, if he was this bad at communicating, I wasn't even sure I wanted him as an agent. Again, I received no response and wrote him off. On August 29th, 2023, I tweeted very vaguely about him as a way to blow off steam. He was either watching my tweets or someone who I provided the name to over DM reached out to him, because that evening Jonathan called me at least 2 times and left a voicemail. I won't be providing the audio of that voicemail, which I gave to the agency when I contacted them. That's fair. However, the tone felt hostile, especially given he was contacting me after 10 p.m. his time. Okay, that's past business hours. I will, however, say he claimed I didn't have all the information and that he was always interested in my book. After I didn't answer his calls because I send all unknown numbers to voicemail, he emailed me. After reading the email, I found the voicemail on my phone and listened to it and was obviously freaked out. I talked with my writing group and even sought some advice from a lawyer friend just in case of what my next steps should be. Ultimately, I blocked his number and then emailed him back the next day to withdraw my manuscript. On the advice of a friend, I then reached out the same day to the VP to detail the situation fully. Since I emailed her on a Friday, she got back to me on Monday to let me know they would handle it internally. At this time, I told an author friend who told their agent at the same agency about the situation, and that agent also contacted the VP. Oh, I forgot one date. On May 14th, I'm presuming this is 2023, around the last time I nudged him, I decided his behavior was unprofessional and reached out to the president of the agency to say so. She got back to me the same day the VP did to let me know she had missed my email, making her aware of his behavior, an email which I made the VP aware of, hence the reply, and said more to come. I guess this was the more to come. I have also since learned from other former clients of his that I'm not the only person he wasn't communicating with. It seems it wasn't just me. There are a few lessons here, which is the reason I'm sharing this story in the first place. Querying writers. Be careful who you share your personal info with. Don't query any agent asking for your home address. They don't need it at this juncture. That's red flag behavior. To protect yourselves, I don't know what she was saying there. Don't let any agent make you feel worthless because they can't find the time to properly communicate time issues with you. That's on them, not you. Agreed. They don't owe you an explanation because everyone deserves privacy. Okay, yes. But if they're interested in your manuscript but need to take more time with it, they should be communicating that. This is a professional world and some people in it need to learn that. Okay. Don't let anyone gaslight you into thinking you're in the wrong. They wouldn't have jobs without writers. Yeah, come on, you better say that. Lit agents and agencies, please stop asking for people's addresses in your query forms. I've even seen some that require them. Why do you need them? It leaves querying writers who need you for traditional publishing open to the potential of being harassed like I was. Okay. If anyone has questions, you can DM her. Don't DM this woman. Leave her to her privacy. But she concludes by saying, just know that what happened to me is not okay on any level. And if you've been treated this way or are being treated this way, you're not alone. You are not alone in this querying world. But I would say, please take note of NM Minardi's lessons, because that is a nightmare that she endured, and she endured it so that you don't have to while you're querying. I want to thank you for joining me this weekend for this weekend special of Ceree Reads. I will see y'all on Wednesday. I promise this time I will see y'all on Wednesday for our regularly scheduled programs. And I will also see you around a bookstore, a library, or anywhere else. Books are king. Get to reading. I believe in you. Bye.